Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is Dr. Peter L. Levin, Senior Advisor to the Secretary and Chief Technology Officer at the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs. So, Peter, social media is ubiquitous. Many platforms, folks engaging in whatever platform they seem to be particularly interested in. I'd like to understand your view of how you're using social media to connect with employees and constituents, and perhaps you could illustrate some success stories.
One of my most favorite stories of the last 3.5 years is a social media story. So just to make sure that you and I are kind of in the same frame of reference here, you know, so we use this to communicate with our stakeholders, sort of, you know, an alternative channel. It happens to be a digital channel. We use this to get ideas from our employees, right? And we also use this to engage, not in a almost like email, right? You know, say asynchronously. You don't know exactly when I'm going to read it. I don't know exactly when you're going to read it, but we can start at least having the beginning of a dialogue that we may want to pull off of the social media onto a more conventional platform, whether it's like real email where you can write more or a telephone call, right? So we're doing all of those things. One of the first projects that I did now 3 years ago was to ask our employees how to solve the backlog problem. Right? Okay. So the first thing you should know is nobody had ever actually asked before, right? So here you are with these guys working, you know, as much as 60 hours a week. You know, these are, you know, GS7s to GS9s. They're not making a ton of money, right? They're schlepping files back and forth. They're using cruddy computer screens, sometimes just one, with, you know, mounds of paper around them trying to process a claim. And so you might think in this age of ubiquitous personal computing and fast internet that they go home and they think, Jesus, I wish I had this capability at work, at least a piece of it. So we, in a very structured, very organized way, we went to this was actually the first VA innovation project. This is the first project of this organization that's now run by Jonah. And we said, how would you solve this problem, right? And we segmented it up in sensible ways. And then my favorite category was the Babe Ruth category. I said, swing for the fences. I realize that we may not have asked the questions the right way. I'm not a claims processing guy. I don't know what I don't know. So in the event that you have an idea that doesn't fit snugly into one of those four categories, here's the and everything else category. And those were always the best ones, right? Those are the craziest ones. Those are the ones that I like the most. And we bring in people like Craig Newmark, Craig from Craigslist, and he's one of the judges, right? And you get to meet Craig if you're one of the finalists. And so we're using social media in that way, right? You can imagine the hue and cry. You know, people are going to have, you know, gender or racial or lifestyle slurs. People are going to put up their social security numbers. They're going to complain about their boss. Dogs and cats will live together. The earth will break in 5 pieces if you do this, right? It didn't happen. This is ties snugly to something that I said a few minutes ago, right? We have this, you know, conception like if you empower people, they're going to abuse it and hit you back, right? And I don't want to say it never happened, but here's what didn't happen. You have a 20,000-person agency, the VBA, and we had a couple of people who spent a little bit of time making sure that we were in the guardrails of things that you would be outraged if you heard it on the street or if you saw it on TV. It didn't happen one time. Somebody mistakenly put a social security number in. I think that it was like, you know, it was in their buffer and they hit control C and didn't realize it. It was like completely non sequitur to anything, right? It was gorgeous, right? So there's an example where we're really trying to empower our employees. It's sort of one of the themes of our conversation today. We got to do that really in the first couple months. If you look at our Facebook account, this is an initiative that was led at that time by Tammy Duckworth and then by Brandon Friedman. And today it was sort of institutionalized inside of the VA. We went from zero. We had no Facebook presence. And God forbid, you were not allowed to even use it on your desktop. Oh, why would you do that? You know, you might be goofing around. We would never let you touch it. To the most friended cabinet agency. We went from zero to hero in the course of like a year. hundreds of thousands of subscribers, and we use this as a mechanism of communication. We've got an appointment announcement, got an important press announcement, stuff that you wouldn't put in a press announcement that allows people to kind of understand in a more granular way what's going on that they otherwise couldn't see. Here's my favorite story. So I look at the Facebook account. Right. And I was, you know, sort of the CTO, crazy guy, wild hair, thick glasses, you know, loud voice. And I said, we are so doing this. We are absolutely doing this. You know, I was like lobbying in a pup tent outside the secretary's office until I got him to say yes. Right. You know, it's really, really serious about it. And I look at it and I see what kind of comments, because they're really concerned. And you know, something we don't always get just compliments from veterans about how we're doing. Right. And there was this guy who just seemed more balanced than everybody else. Like his complaint was something I felt like I could personally do something about. So I pull him off the Facebook page and I say, hey, man, what's really going on here? That guy's name is Randy Watson. Randy Watson and I have become good friends. And Randy Watson was one of the first ever users of Blue Button. I got him to test it out. So when I want to know what's really going on in the field, when I want to know what a veteran really sees, when I want to know what a veteran really does with this information, I ask Randy. So it's a silly story. It's a single story. It doesn't scale in any way, but this is a Vietnam veteran who earned his benefits, who gets all of his health care from the VA, and was one of our first users. So we schlepped him in from Joplin, Missouri a couple weeks ago. He sat on a stage with me at the consumer conference that was run by Farzad, and he got to tell his story to thousands of people. Right, that it just doesn't get better than that.
That's a terrific anecdote. I wanted to talk about innovation in itself.
Sure.
And you've said that the beautiful thing about innovation is that you always know where it starts, but you don't always know where it is going to end.
Correct.
Could you elaborate on that insight?
Well, let me give you an example. I mean, what if I told you that I had a way for you to very conveniently take all the stuff that you're filling out on a clipboard when you go to see your doctor, and I'm just going to digitize it for you so you never have to do that again, right? You'd say, well, it sounds okay. I'm not going to give you any money for it, but, you know, sure, it certainly would save me a few minutes and all the stuff that I don't have to remember, right? That's what Blue Button started out as, right? We were giving veterans back the information that they were giving, because we weren't even touching the VISTA system. We were just telling them, oh, you're here to see the doctor. You're here because you have a sore throat. You're here because you want to, you know, refill your penicillin prescription, right? If you fast forward now just 2 years later, you know, a million users plus from my mouth to God's ears, we're going to get the other 313 pretty soon. Here's the thing that we couldn't have possibly predicted, that Blue Button becomes part of the meaningful use requirements for EHRs. You know, that Blue Button becomes the brand and the label that people know. Oh, when I see that silly little icon with the down arrow, oh, that's where I go to get health information, right? When we use this now as the place that we have the authoritative, clinically valid medical record, probably properly tagged, labeled, coded, in a way that is completely interoperable at a data level? No, I actually wasn't thinking that when I asked the secretary if I could start. You know, that just kind of emerged in the fullness of time.
I have a twofold question, because it's around cultivating a risk-tolerant environment.
Yeah.
And does doing that, is that an essential characteristic of an effective chief technologist?
I think so, yeah. If you're going to play the safe role, if you don't have the personality, if you don't have the risk tolerance, if you don't have sort of like the emotional centeredness, mm-hmm. to say, oh, that was a bad idea. Perfect example. I met with one of the Presidential Innovation Fellows, and he's great, right? It's Matt McCall. He's coming to us from the outside. He's one of the guys who helped set us up in the open source platform. And man, that fur was flying, right? I mean, he wanted to make a left. I wanted to make a right. I'm older. He's younger. I've got more gray hair. He's got less gray hair. And I had to call him into the office, and I had to say, Matt, listen, I don't want to be a jerk about this. I'm just smarter than you. And he kind of looks at me like, well, maybe. So fast forward one day later, and we learn who is right. Because this is really black and white conversation, right? You either make a left on this or you make a right on this, right? And I am betting hundreds of dollars, hand in fire. I don't know what you're thinking. You're just thinking about it wrong. But he knew something I didn't know. And we come back and we reconvene because it's a super urgent problem. We've got to get this solved right away. Otherwise, he can't keep coding. And I was absolutely positively wrong. I tell you, if you would have asked me when we were having that conversation, if you would have asked me, you know, who's right, I would have said, this is a joke. Can you add single digits in your head? He's just having a bad day, right? And so I sat him down and we had this conversation. I said, hey, Matt, do you remember, you remember yesterday, don't you? Right? And he's like, yeah, right? I said, here's what I learned overnight. Here's the article that I read. Here's the person that I spoke to. Here's what you were trying to tell me that I didn't understand. And he's like, yeah, exactly right. I said, oh, you were right. Absolutely, you were right. Sorry about that, right? I completely agree with you. Now let's do it your way, right? Wow. All right. And so for a guy like me, it's like, well, I know more yesterday than I knew today. I understand better what he was trying to tell me. You know, I didn't put my ego into it. I was just trying to make a good technical decision. I was trying to give somebody who's 30 years younger than I am good technical advice. And guess what? He was right. So off you go. Here we go, right? It engenders such a trust, such a confidence, because the next time he fights with me, which is going to be the day after tomorrow when we, you know, encounter our next technical problem and he wants to make a right and I want to make a left, he's going to know that I am not pulling rank on him. I'm telling him what I really think. And then when I come back the next day after that, I hope it'll work out this way. I say, hey, this is what I read overnight. This is the person I spoke to. Here's the website I looked at. Here's how I can prove you are wrong. He's going to say, oh, I didn't know that, or I didn't realize that. Holy cow, I'm glad you figured that out so quickly, right? If you can do that with zero transaction costs, with zero emotion, with the enthusiasm and trust and mission orientation of your colleague, you'll be very successful. You don't need to be CTO. You can be anybody.
Well, before we close this conversation, it's been a wonderful conversation. I want to ask you, putting on your future hat, talk about the future a little bit.
Yeah.
What are some of the more promising emerging technologies that you see out there in the next couple of years?
The technologies that are emerging, I would say generically, right? Some of these will benefit the VA directly. Some of them sort of more indirectly, you know, fall into the categories of energy conservation and storage, right? So anything that has to do with batteries, anything that has to do with energy efficiency is hugely impactful. It has national security implications for our country. It has job creation implications for our country and has scientific implications, how we teach the next generation. So that would be the first thing. The second is anything that has to do with education. I think that you're going to see a transformation right now in not the technology, which is itself pretty interesting in how we teach young people, but how we credential what they've learned. You know, you and I both came up sort of in this mechanism where, you know, you start in kindergarten when you're 5 or 6, and if you're good, you graduate when you're 17 or 18, and if you're lucky, you get to go to college. And what we're finding is not only is it too expensive to do that, it's not necessarily very effective, right? So you're going to see a whole bunch of new things coming along that will more precisely, in a more targeted way, teach people things that they're interested in, so curiosity-based learning, and teach people things that they need to know in order to be successful in the marketplace. I am very, very optimistic about what's happening there. And, of course, the badging and the credentials that go along with that. And then last but not least is anything that has to do with healthcare, right? And so the way that I like to describe this to answer your question is today right now there are about 200 things that we can know about you. You know, how tall are you? How much do you weigh? What's your temperature right now? What's your heart rate right now? What's your blood pressure? What's your white cell count, right? You know, there's a bunch of things that I know how to ask, and let's say it's 200 of them, right? It's probably about that. So already tomorrow, we know that we're going to be able to take a snapshot of your blueprint, right? The design of your body is encoded in your DNA, and we know how to get to your DNA now for a few hundred dollars, right? Okay. Many people think, well, gee, if I know my DNA, I know who I am. That's actually not true. It's actually completely untrue. Now, if you have certain diseases that we've been able to deterministically correlate, if you have this gene, you probably are going to have this advantage or potentially this problem. I know that, right? But for many of us, it's all about not the genome, but the proteome. It's really the chemicals that are inside your body. So what did I just tell you? I said, well, today it's 200 things that we know. Tomorrow it's 20,000 things, the genes in your body. And the day after tomorrow, it's 2 million things, right? And here's what I would like to know, and I bet you would like to know about this too. I would like to know that my kids are eating right every single day. I wouldn't mind doing that by the minute, right? I would like to know that my wife is doing well and that she's going to live a full and rich life, as disease-free as we can make it. And yeah, I'm self-interested enough to want to know whether I can do that for me too, right? So you're going to see this extraordinary explosion of data. We're going from 200 things that we know about you, if you're lucky, once a year when you go to get your checkup, to 2 million things that we want to know about you once an hour, once a minute, once a second. You know, how do you even begin to fathom that problem? So this is a technologist's view into the big data issue, right? And then we can start talking about all the transactions, all the fuel that you spend, all the energy that you consume, all the food that you eat, and where does that food come from? What are the environmental implications of your behavior? How do you connect your financial transactions to all these things? It's an exciting, exciting time to be alive, and we're not even on the steep part of the curve yet. We're trying to still figure out how to ask the right questions.
So what advice would you give to someone who's thinking about a career in public service?
Do it. Absolutely do it. Gosh, the reasons that people tend to not go into public service are twofold. First of all, they think that it doesn't pay very well. And that's probably true at the more senior levels, right? Guys like me who are entrepreneurs and who've, you know, had the good luck to be a little bit successful in the marketplace. Sure. Yeah, I took a salary hit, right? For many other people, it's actually not true. Right. It might be, 5 or 10% less. It might not even be that. In some cases, I know folks that are making more inside of federal government that I think they could get paid if they were outside, not because they're not good, but because what they do is so specialized for public service that those skills don't translate very well. Right. So that's the first thing. The second thing is that people have this, I would say, sort of apocryphal, stereotypic perception that everything inside of public service is bad and everything inside of the private marketplace is good. And it's just not true. You're going to find super smart people, super dedicated people, people who are maniacally devoted to their mission and that are absolutely as enriching and as enriched as anybody you're going to find in any other segment of society. And it is absolutely, as Kennedy said, is the most noble cause. I firmly believe that.
Well, Peter, I want to thank you for joining me today. It's been a wonderful conversation.
Thank you.
Your passion is infectious, I must say. But I also want to thank you for your dedicated service to the country.
Well, I really appreciate that. It's been really the greatest privilege and the greatest pleasure of my life.
This has been the Business of Government Hour, featuring a conversation with Dr. Peter L. Levin, Senior Advisor to the Secretary and Chief Technology Officer at the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs. Be sure to join us next week for another informative, insightful, and in-depth conversation on improving government effectiveness. For the Business of Government Hour, I'm Michael Keegan, and thanks for joining us.
This has been the Business of Government Hour. Be sure to visit us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. There you can learn more about our programs and get a transcript of today's conversation. Until next week, it's businessofgovernment.org.